Welcome back to the News and Views, our radio network. Joel Heitkamp here, your host. Chief Zabolski is with us. That's right, Dave Zabolski, Fargo Police Chief. We try to do this once a month, and then we reserve the right to do it more if certain circumstances call for it. But just want to get, you know, always a take on what's going on. Chief Zabolski, good to have you on News and Views.
Thanks, Joel. Good to be here.
I was thinking of your men and women that are under your charge today with all the accidents that are happening, all the, you know, when it's icy out, how scared do they get? I mean, because they can get dinged up pretty quick out there on the roadways.
Well, you know, the accidents are, in terms of injuries to them, it probably happens more when they're getting out of their cars and slipping on sidewalks in areas that aren't properly either cleared or salted. But you know, we do a pretty good job of avoiding those types of accidents. We take a lot of accidents. I don't think a huge concern from that perspective.
Okay, well, that's good. I mean, what's changed in my lifetime, and maybe this isn't the policy with the Fargo PD, but, you know, I've seen law enforcement officers now not park, you know, in a way where they can get dinged up quicker, and I've seen them go over on the passenger side more. Now, which way do you handle it in Fargo?
It's really up to the officer. It depends on where the stop is made, and you're right. Actually, the passenger side approach has been in play for quite some time. You'll see it a lot with the troopers as well because of the dangers of that active roadway to their left. Our folks, you know, depending again on the circumstances, could take either approach. I think most often we probably take a driver approach unless, again, we are in the middle of a real busy roadway. Sometimes you might have more than one cop. You know, you might have one on each side. It's really just dependent on the situation.
Okay. Also, you know, a report came out. I know we talked about this one day, but we always have new listeners. You know, the crime rate in Fargo. Speak to that, if you would, in the recent report that went out.
Sure. Well, our persons and property crimes, both categories are down again for the second year in a row, which is outstanding. And we had a lot of good drops in categories such as homicide, shots fired, aggravated assault, rape, burglary, all those categories, which is, you know, good news. That's, we want to keep it going in that direction. We had an increase in crimes against society, which is a lot of our proactive activity, and that really reflects the surge in the issues that we're dealing with in terms of narcotics, particularly fentanyl in the M30s and meth, and also weapons. And when we make those arrests, it counts as a crime, and so it adds numbers to that category. So that category being up, again, shows proactive work by our department. The crimes against people and property being reduced shows good work in the other direction. So I think a very favorable crime report overall.
What crime do you think gets unreported the most?
Well, I'm sure it's probably sexual assault, human trafficking, those types of things. We've worked a lot with our service providers, and actually we added a new victim advocate position late last year to try and bolster that those relationships and make victims more comfortable in reporting those to us so that we can do those investigations.
I thought about sexual assault. I thought about domestic violence, which oftentimes can be the same thing. But, you know, when you see those, some of that, let me ask this the right way. Is some of it habitual? Is some of this, hey, we've been there before, his wife won't file charges? I mean, have you seen some of that before?
Oh, yeah, I think that's very much the nature of the beast. And the domestic violence side, you know, folks that live in that environment oftentimes are maybe financially stuck in that environment. You know, they want the abuse to end, but they don't have a means to support themselves or their kids on their own. So, well, they might call the police initially. As it progresses through court, that might change their decision on that, and the case may fall apart, which is why, surprisingly, the clearances of those domestic violence cases should be 100% because you know who did it. But they're not for a lot of those reasons. And on the sexual assault side, we know very well from just research and experience that people who commit sexual assault will continue to do that kind of activity, especially when you're talking about pedophilia and those types of things, until they get identified, stopped, and get into the justice system.
So let me give you a scenario. there's a fight going on in a house, and clearly violence is being done upon a woman. You get there, it's easy to detect. You know, you've been notified by the neighbor because of all the noise. You get there, and it's not hard to see exactly what happened. The wife decides that she's the wife, girlfriend decides they're not going to press charges. Do you still have the authority as the PD to arrest him?
Well, if there's probable cause that an assault occurred, yes, we could. What likely would happen, though, in that case is that the state's attorneys wouldn't take that any further without a cooperating victim. Now, in some cases, I think they can and they have, but it's pretty rare. The system really requires a cooperative victim to participate.
What happens if the victim in this case says, you know, look, if you do this, it's just going to be worse when he comes out? That you arrest him, he's going to make bail, he's going to come out, and I'm going to pay for it times 10. I mean, how often have you seen that?
I think that comes up also. I mean, but it's a mandatory arrest situation, and I think people feel that way. In the meantime, we encourage them to, you know, make contact with service providers and get resources. There's the domestic violence shelter that can take victims in as well and get them acclimated. A lot of times at the scene, folks aren't aware of these services, and they don't know that they've got other options. So we really have to work with the information we have and try and really safeguard the well-being of the victim involved.
Okay, let me take it another way. You've got violence going on in the home upon a child, right? It's 3 a.m, and you see a 15-year-old or 14-year-old kid walking the streets, and you check it out. Because you know at 3 a.m, you're not going to see a 14-year-old kid walking the streets that often. And they say, look, I can't go home. You know, he's beating the ever-living crap out of me here. I can't go there. What's your actions? What do you do?
That's an investigation coordinated with our social service agencies. So from there, we would investigate and make an arrest if appropriate. You know, a lot of times, substantiating that isn't always easy. It depends on, you know, are there obvious injuries? Can we corroborate that information? And then there's also the social service agencies that have a part of that in terms of custody or potential custody of a minor who may be a victim and where do they place them and that kind of thing. But we would investigate it like any other crime and try and figure this out and make sure that we were, you know, preventing harm to those potential victims. But again, we have to work within the system, and with juveniles, it gets even a little trickier from that perspective.
So, what do you do with the kid? I mean, you've got a child in your possession at 3 a.m.
Yeah, he'd be placed through the social services. If he couldn't go home, we would turn him over to social services. They would find a suitable placement for him in the interim. That was the case.
Well, and what I was trying to find out is, you know, I have a sister that works and manages youth works in town. And so I didn't know if that was a place that you take them or, you know, if you take them, if there's other facilities at the city of Fargo. I mean, because obviously at 3 a.m, it's got to be tough to take that child someplace safe.
Right. Well, YouthWorks is limited into what type of kids they can take, and depending on the situation, that may or may not be an option. But we would also work through Cass County Social Services, especially with allegations of abuse and things of that nature. They would be involved in that decision making.
Okay. There's a lot of talk in a county in close proximity to you that I'm not going to mention, okay? But there's these rubs at times, and I realize you're not the Cass County Sheriff, but there isn't always good partnerships between cities and sheriffs. Grade your relationship with Cass County, with Clay County, with the city of Moorhead.
I think we've got very good relationships across the board. We have a lot of different regional teams and regional relationships. We help each other out on a regular basis. So I think our metro relationship overall is very good. We've got the shared dispatch center, and I think I think we have a lot of collaborations here.
I just think that's so vitally important. I think that people that get all territorial like that and won't work, for example, with the counties when they have the ability to do that. I'm glad to hear that you work really well with Cass County. I just think that's such a huge step. I think that most cities, especially the smaller cities, you need to recognize trained personnel, that type of thing versus what they can afford on any given day in their local police officer. And I'm not trying to diminish them as much as trying to recognize that when you grow up in small towns like I did, and to have the county come in and provide that expertise, and many times it's a good thing. I realize the city of Fargo can pay its own way. It's a lot easier, yeah. But there's economics involved too, Chief.
Right. Yeah. No, absolutely. And I think it's the largest law enforcement agency, in essence, that we do a lot of, we participate across the board. We've got regional partners involved across the board, and I think we work well together. And that does provide, I think that helps some of those smaller agencies or maybe those that don't have as much activity as we may have here in the city of Fargo, the opportunity to gain some of those skills and be part of those processes. So I think it helps keep a safer metro across the board.
Chief of Police in the city of Fargo, Dave Zabolski, is here. We're talking about policies, talking about what the state of the police force is here in Fargo. Staffing. Are you where you need to be? Are you in a position where the staff that you're bringing in are well-trained? I mean, where are you at when it comes to staffing right now?
Well, we're continuing on our to fill our staffing. I think we're in a very good position. We're recruiting right now for our, actually probably the first week in June, academy. That's ongoing, and we'll be in a position to fill existing vacancies, and we have approval to overfill some spots to help get us ahead of any potential retirement curve by the end of the year. Because it takes so long to train an officer, up to 18 months really, before they're out on the road on their own. And again, they're still very, very new. And it takes several years for an officer to really get, comfortable across the board with a variety of scenarios. So, that's a lot of responsibility, and that's a lot of time to get them up to snuff. So we are constantly working on recruitment. Our strategic plan includes the objective of obtaining a 1.6 per 1,000 ratio of officer to citizen, which would put us, we'd say we would need about 210 sworn officers. We're currently at 192. So we'll be requesting again in the plan. Our objective is to get 6 additional FTE sworn spots in the next 3 budget cycles to get us caught up and make us sustainable, because the city's growing so fast. We're already behind the 8 ball in terms of our staff on the street and, frankly, our facilities to support them. Also another area that we've got gaps that I think the facilities management evaluation pointed out, and we'll be working with our city admin and commission on looking at that going forward and putting together a solid plan to address those issues as well. But I think we're moving in a very good direction across the board. It all comes down to, what gets funded and what doesn't get funded. But the longer you don't add these positions, the farther behind we fall. There's no doubt about that.
Chief, always good to talk to you. Next time we come back, I'm going to ask you what you would say in front of a classroom of 18-year-olds, why they should go into law enforcement. So be ready for that next time, okay?
Sounds good. Thanks, Joel.
You bet. Fargo Police Chief Dave Zabolski.